So is the context for today's discussion. We'll take the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita toward the end. Arjuna is asking Krishna, what are the symptoms of a self-realized person? It's a question he asks several times throughout in the course of the book. How do you recognize a self-realized soul? How do they walk? How do they speak? How do they sit? That's what Arjuna wants to know. Stitta pragyasika pasha samadhi specificationa. Stitta di kim vipasheta. Kim asita pragyasika. That's what Arjuna. What's the symptom of a person, the sign of a person in samadhi, a person who's self-realized, who's absorbed in transcendence? How does he speak? How does he sit? How does he walk? And Krishna answers in a different way. Arjuna wants to know about these external signs, but Krishna answers differently. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan parta manogatan atmanye vatvaran tushta sthita pragyasa. Sthita pragyasa. Pragyasa. Pragya. Pragya means self-realized, the person who's well-situated, sthita-pragya, well-situated in transcendence. What are his signs? Krishna says, prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manodana. Right away, not here's how he sits, here's how he walks, but the first sign is that he gives up all material desires. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Manogatan means,
let's see how Prabhupada takes it.
Yeah. Meant which have come from mental concoction. Manogatan. Desires which have come from mental concoction. The phrase is very nice. Manogatan. Actually, there's nothing to be desired in the material world. Nothing worth desiring in the material world. It's produced by the material energy, whatever there is. It's, in fact, a source of trouble. That Krishna will say elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita. Yehi samsparshada bhogat dukkayoni evita. We have some people for you to meet. There was a movie I happened to see on the airplane of Charlie Chaplin. It's all right to watch Charlie Chaplin movies because Prabhupada liked them. So I consider Charlie Chaplin as bona fide. In the movie, Charlie Chaplin is in a park somewhere. And this young girl rides by on a horse, and he becomes enchanted by this young girl. And in the movie, there's a flash forward, I guess, in which Charlie Chaplin is envisioning himself living in a little cottage with this girl, and how they're having little children and such a nice domestic scene. And he's obviously infatuated with this girl. As I recall, he goes searching after her, chasing after her. And she rides, finally he catches up with her, she rides by again. And he sees that she's wearing glasses. And that's it, the whole bubble bursts. It's a mental concoction. Some ideas there in the mind, cooked up by the mind, of what kind of enjoyment we're going to get. There was another, this is not a movie, this is a story from, I read, if anybody finds this story, then let me know, because I haven't seen it in about 45 years. It's quite a good story. I thought I knew who wrote it, and I think I turned out to be wrong. So, but the story is that there was a woman who worked at the theater. She was like a cleaning lady or something like that. And this, so many acts at the theater, but she would, this one ventriloquist came to town, and she became infatuated. She would sneak in just after the show began and she was finished with her work. She would sneak in, not sneak in, but she would slip into the back of the theater, and she would watch this show, and there was this tall, handsome man, and he's described in the story how absolutely enchanting he was, tall and handsome and mustache and all of that, with this little dummy on his lap. And he would go through the show, and she was just sort of drinking him in the back. And then just before the end of the show, she would slip out. And she was thinking of him and thinking of him and thinking of him. And finally, the last day of the show came. They would leave town. So she screwed up her courage and went into the green room, the room where the actors relax after the show, or prepare before the show. And she came in, and of course it's all very well described in the story, but to make a long story short, she saw that the ventriloquist was the dummy. The little dummy sitting on the lap of the tall, handsome man was actually the ventriloquist. And the tall, handsome man was just a doll. As I recall, the doll fell over and his glass eyeball rolled down the floor. And that was her dream. So I thought it was a pretty good story. The desire was there. The idea of enjoyment was there. But it was a mental concoction. There were some impressions from the senses. They went into the mind, and the mind cooked up this whole... But it was an illusion. Now Krishna says, illusion means she thought it was one thing, but it was something else. It wasn't a total illusion. There was a ventriloquist, there was a dummy, but she was confused as to which was which. The dummy was there, the ventriloquist was there, but neither was what she thought they were. This material world is like that. The Mayavadis philosophers say that the whole world is false, as if it weren't here, which is very difficult to comprehend, actually. I guess people think of that as some sort of deep mystical truth. But here are the walls, here's the floor. It does seem that they're here. The Mayavadis say, no, they're not here. There's nothing here, actually. The Buddhists would have us believe that there's actually nothing at all in existence, that we've only dreamed up the very fact of existence, and in fact there's nothing but void and nothingness. And the Shankaracharya and personalists would have us believe that no, there's something, but that something is devoid of forms, devoid of qualities, devoid of variety. It's absolute homogeneous oneness. And so all these forms and qualities and so on that we experience are in fact illusory. Sarva kalavidam Brahma. There's nothing but Brahma, and we've imagined all of these manifestations of things and people and animals and so on. So the Vedic literature, and they give the example of a rope and a snake, that we're seeing a rope, but we're thinking it's a snake. So we're seeing this world, we're thinking it's real, but actually it's not real. Or we're thinking that the world is, yes, that it's real, but it's not. So the Vaishnavas have a different take on things. They say that, no, the world is real, but it's not what we think it is. The fact that that we're mistaking as a rope for a snake implies that there must be a rope somewhere, and there must be a snake somewhere. And the illusion is that I'm thinking that one is the other. I mistake a rope for a snake, or worse, I mistake a snake for a rope. But both of them exist. For another example, they say that all that glitters is not gold. So you go underwater diving, and you see some, say, an oyster shell or something, and it looks like gold. Because it's glittering. So it's not gold. But that doesn't mean it's nothing. It's an oyster shell. So the gold, and there's gold somewhere, otherwise you wouldn't have thought this is gold. The gold exists, the oyster shell exists, but the gold, the oyster shell is not gold. That's the illusion. Not that I think there's gold, not that I think that there's an oyster shell, but that I've switched the two that way. So, what is our illusion? The world is here, but we're thinking that it's something separate and enjoyable. I'm thinking, first of all, that I'm this body. That's the beginning of the illusion. I'm thinking that I'm this material body, which I'm not. And in relation to the body, I'm thinking this is my country, this is my family, this is my money, this is my this, this is my this. In this way, I'm bewildered. And the next bewilderment is that I'm thinking that this is something enjoyable for me. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan dunam karanam gunasangasya sarasad yoni janashya. Purusha, what does Purusha mean?
Living.
Yes. What else does it mean?
Enjoyment.
Purush means living entity or man. Purusha means the enjoyer. So I think that I'm the enjoyer. And Prakriti Stogi. Prakriti means nature, or Prakriti means that which is enjoyed or enjoyable. Purusha Prakriti Stogi. Bhunkte Prakriti Jangana. So Prakriti means the material nature. Total material nature is called Prakriti. And Prakriti has three qualities. What is that? This is easy. Three qualities of Prakriti. Yeah, three modes of material nature. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. Or guna means qualities. So material things have so many qualities. This is hot, this is cold, this is sweet, this is salty, this is sour, this is astringent, this is that. So many qualities. We're in hearing, this is loud, this is soft, this is sweet, this is up-tempo, this is, there's so many qualities to sound, so many qualities to sight, to touch. This is hard, this is soft, this is that. Sight, sound, touch, taste, and smell. We have five senses for gathering knowledge. Gathering knowledge, the term Gyanendriya, gathering knowledge, is a little misleading, because we think of knowledge as being like wisdom or realization, or a man of knowledge is somebody who has a clear understanding of what's what. But here, Gyanendriya, knowledge gathering, it just means it's data gathering would be closer. You know, we know something. If I know it, doesn't mean I really understand it, but it means I perceive it. You can say that the senses for perception. I hear, I taste, I smell. I perceive something. Gyanendriyas, they perceive, they get data, they get information. Not exactly knowledge, but information. Or you can say impressions in this context. Some sensation. Some sensation. So the knowledge-gathering senses, or the senses of perception, have these five objects: sound, smell, taste, sound, sight, and form, and touch. So, Prakriti Jan Guna, the qualities of all these objects come from material nature. Nature produces all these varieties: hot things and sweet things and red things and green things and blue things and yellow things, big things and small things and round things and square things and staccato things and smooth things and all, so many different qualities. If we read a book, the book has so many qualities. If we meet a person, the person has so many qualities. If we attend a theater or a movie, there's so many qualities. And we're enjoying. Prakriti Jan Gunan, Bhunkte. Bhunkte means enjoying. We try to arrange our lives in such a way that the things we like, we can enjoy. What is that expression? To enjoy the good things in life. We try to enjoy the good things in life. So Purusha Prakriti Stovi, we're enjoyers, and we're in this material nature, and nature produces things with so many qualities, and we're enjoying according to our taste. the one person likes sweet things more, another person likes hot things more, one person likes this kind of, one person likes sports, another person likes literature, another person likes jazz, another person likes something else. And karanam guna sangasya. Enjoyment means association. I have to come in touch with what it is that I want to enjoy. I have to hear that jazz. I have to touch that soft thing. I have to see that beautiful object. And I become associated with that. Even one becomes mad after that. Gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it. Or, typically this takes the form of what we call love. The young boy is attracted to the young girl. The young girl is attracted to the young boy because of the qualities. He's so tall, he's so handsome, he's so this, that. Or he's attracted to her, she's so beautiful, she's so clever, she's so whatever it is. So the qualities are attractive. Being attracted by those qualities, one wants to associate. The boys and boy and girl want to associate and enjoy their company. Karanam guna sangasya sarasad yoni janmasi. And the result of that is that one becomes attached to something produced of this material nature, and that perpetuates one's existence in material nature. Because I'm attached to enjoying this material world, I have to stay in this material world. I have to stay in this material. Sarasad yoni janmasu, which means sometimes taking a good birth, sometimes a bad birth, that is, sometimes higher, sometimes lower. There are 8,400,000 different species of life. So we're taking birth in one after another. Is that enjoyable? But we're thinking, this is enjoyment. We have a kind of dream. Even like children, I wish I could be a bird. If I were a bird, then I could fly wherever I wanted to go. I could sing and I could fly, and no one could tell me that I couldn't go here or I couldn't go there. I wish I were a bird. Or the child imagines some other, I wish I were a fish. I could dive and I could swim. He's imagining how nice it would be to, sometimes he imagines, I wish I could be a grown up. He doesn't know. He's imagining different ideas. How nice this would be, how nice that would be. And in fact, it's not so nice. The birds have so many problems. They're always looking this way, that way, because there's always some threat to their life. I suppose it gets quite wearisome to have to migrate all the time. Big, long trek. And always be looking around, where's food, where's food, where's food. The fish have so many predators that are after them, including fishermen. There's problems in every form of life, whether one is a fish or a bird. But the child is imagining how nice it is. This is called mental concoction. So by mental concoction, one imagines this will be enjoyable, that will be enjoyable. But in fact, yehi samsparsha jab hoga dukkha yoni evite. Krishna says the contact of the senses with whatever it is that we hope to enjoy is actually a source of misery. Elsewhere, Krishna says it may seem like nectar in the beginning, but in the end, it's just like poison. Tatsukam rajasam poktam vishayandriya samyogad yaptaragre nitopamam parinahame visham tatsukam rajasam smitam. From mental concoction, that passion is generated. Whether it's a passion for sports, or a passion for money, or a passion for the opposite sex, or a passion for scientific discovery. There's so much passion. And does it result in happiness? Maybe in the beginning. But at the end, it becomes stale or miserable. I met one man on the train. He's kind of a bum, actually. Sort of down and out guy. Not exactly a bum, but down and out. Explained to me his story that he was married, but he'd been separated from his wife, and the kids were with her, and the usual, quite a common story actually these days. And he said, having kids is an expensive habit. You don't have to be down and out to realize that. But you can imagine that it started out so nice. The birds were singing and the flowers were blooming. And she's smiling at him and he's smiling at her. And at the end, it's like, get out of my sight. I don't want to see you again. Take that. And the court case and the quarrel over custody and the insults and the alimony, the child support. He has to spend work and get money for children from whom he'll get no pleasure. It started out just like nectar. And at the end, it becomes just like poison. So someone will say, well, yes, that's maybe his case. But in my case, but even suppose this is the fairy tale, and they lived happily ever after.
Happily ever after.
Yeah, they lived happily, and they lived happily ever after. That's the fairy tale. The reality is that either one died or the other died or they both died. But of course, they both died. It's just a question of did they both die together or who came first? Yadanchubantakontya. Krishna says that enjoyment has a beginning and an end. So when it ends, then I become miserable. Either I become miserable in the course of the thing, when it turns out contrary to my expectation, or it seems exactly what I wanted, and then it falls apart. At least when I have to leave this body. I don't want to go. I have my wife, I have my children, I have my home, I have my this, I have my that, I have my plans. But I have to leave everything. That's painful. Or they leave me. I loved her so much, but now he's married. Tragedy. The world is full of such tragedies. And there's no exception in the sense that everyone has to die. Someone says, well, even that's not so bad. If you live happily ever after, at least till the end of your life, then that's good. But happily ever after till the end of life, my life means that I'm attached to that enjoyment and now I have to come back and do it again. I have to again go for that. And it may not be exactly the same way. It may be in a lower species, it may be in a higher species, maybe the same species. It's not the same job, the same apartment, the same everything. There's some change, and it may not be exactly what I had in mind. But it's not just another birth, but it's another and another and another and another and another. It's innumerable births. In innumerable, well, not innumerable, but 8,400,000 species, that's enough that we can barely conceive of it. And why do I have to come back? Because I'm imagining that there's happiness here. Because I have some idea about happiness, prakriti-jan gunan, produced by material nature. I associated with that, went after that. And that becomes the source of my continued existence in the material world. So this is the only generation of different species of life. So, manogatan. Krishna says all of these different enjoyments are manogatan. They're products of mental concoction. I'm imagining how nice it is. Prabhupada gives the example that water is neither hot water is not neither enjoyable but or not enjoyable. But under certain circumstances, we imagine, oh, hot water will be so nice. But the same water in another circumstance isn't nice. In the winter, it's nice. In the summer, it's not nice. So we're imagining a certain happiness there from this or from that. That happiness is, in another, from another point of view, it's meaningless for the soul. The soul does not become satisfied by any amount of happiness derived from the senses. The soul has a different need. But we imagine that matter will satisfy him. We imagine that matter will satisfy him. The position is, Prabhupada explains, like putting petrol in the car. That's all right, it fills the car. But if you think, now I won't be hungry anymore because my car is full, that doesn't work. But I'm not this car. No amount of petrol filling will fill me. The soul has spiritual desires. Or desires for, what is spiritual desire? He lived happily ever after. We want to live happily ever after. Even Prabhupada gives the example, you get an apartment, then you examine the lease very carefully to make sure that you can't get kicked out. Because if it's a nice apartment, you want to go on living there. You don't want to see a sign on your door, you have 24 hours. So the soul wants that. It doesn't want 24 hours of enjoyment or 2 weeks worth of enjoyment. It wants permanent enjoyment, like vacation. Nobody actually wants to go on, you know, see, a 2 week vacation. You could win a 2 week vacation. Nobody wants a 2 week vacation. We want a vacation that's permanent. But we get 2 weeks in a year. A living being wants to live forever. And he wants to be happy forever. And he's imagining that he can somehow get something like that here. But that's not possible. He can't stay. And what is that enjoyment? It's something external. It doesn't actually satisfy the needs of the living being, but it simply satisfies some demand of the senses. But even that is not true, because the demands of the senses are never satisfied. The senses never say, "That's it, now I'll never ask for anything again." Especially in the mode of passion, the desire is unlimited, it can't be satisfied. Prabhupada gives the example, you may throw petrol on the fire to extinguish it. You know, you throw enough of it, and that might even work briefly, but it will shoot up. So we think that we'll enjoy, but the more we try to enjoy, the more our desires expand. Which is why, you know, the person who had something he wanted to achieve, some level of salary or some size house or some whatever, isn't satisfied when he gets it. He gets it and now he wants the next thing. I saw a sign in Bombay, a poster. "Now that you've made your first million, you know, what do you want to do?" And the answer, of course, was to start on your second million. Matter is gross compared to the soul. Of course, we can talk about how really gross it is. What is that? The body, Prabhupada describes, as a bed of mucus, bile, and air. And he tells the story. You know the story about the girl who had this lusty man after her, who wanted the secret of her beauty. You all know that story. Do you know that story? No. There was a man, you know, one of those dashing young chaps. That is to say, pretty lusty guy. And he, I forget the circumstance, but he was after this beautiful young woman. And but she was a chaste young girl, and his what we used to call indecent proposals were not attractive to her. But he kept after her and after her and after her. Finally she said, "All right, come back in 2 weeks and then we can enjoy." And she gave him her ring and off he went with great expectations. And during those 2 weeks she took laxatives and purgatives continuously and passed loose stool and vomited all that she ate and kept all the diarrhea and vomit in pots. But then he came back 2 weeks later to see this horrible looking hag sitting at the gate And he explained that I have an appointment, I'm looking for such and such beautiful girl. He said, I'm that girl. He said, that's not possible. The girl I'm looking for, you know, don't put me on. The girl I'm looking for is young and beautiful. She said, no, I'm that girl. Actually, I have it wrong. He gave her the ring. So now she showed him the ring. I'm that girl. But I've separated my beauty for you. I've separated for you the essence of my beauty. And then she led him next door to the room where all those pots were kept and showed him the distilled essence of the beauty that he was after. I think the man came to his senses. One would hope so. So all of this by way of explaining this term, manogatan, mental concoction. We're imagining some kind of enjoyment. And the mind really gets going on this. The mind, once it starts to imagine, it can really go on and on and on and on. Creative imagination. We start imagining. And advertising is there to help us. It's pitched to stimulate the imagination. You don't just show whatever it is, a car or a lawnmower or anything, and say, well, it has this and it has that. But you paint the picture of how much you could enjoy when you are the owner of this. There's a I saw an ad for an Apple computer, I believe it was, and or it could have been any, and there's the computer sitting on the desk and the guy is there and he's doing all these things and the girl is looking on with admiration. Yeah, so you're not just selling something that crunches numbers and records words, but something that will make other people, especially female people if you're male, look on with admiration, because you have this and can do this. A mental concoction. But that's advertising, we think, the picture. So, the self-realized person, Krishna says, his sign is Atmanyeva, that Sarvan Partha Manogatan. He gives up all of these desires that arise from mental concoction. And then what does he do? Does he become now void? Krishna says, Atmanyev Atmana Tushta. Atmanyeva Santushta. Yes, Atmanyeva Atmana Tushta. By the mind, it can be read different ways. But the mind becomes satisfied in the soul. Atmana means by the mind. Atmani. The soul doesn't take pleasure in external things. The person who doesn't have self-realization is directed outward toward all the things that he could possibly enjoy. But the self-realized person is, and he's never satisfied also. Always wanting. Elsewhere, kama, he's desiring. But atmanyeva atmana tushta, the self-realized person is satisfied. pushta means he's satisfied. How is he satisfied? He's satisfied within himself. Atmanyeva atmana pushta. Because he knows, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. The soul is by nature joyful. Brahmabhuta prasanatma mishrochuti nikanti. When one is self-realized, he has nothing to lament over, nothing to desire, to hanker for. He's happy within himself, self-satisfied. Or another meaning of Atmani is Paramatmani. The soul becomes the Atmanyeva Atmana, the mind becomes satisfied thinking of Krishna. Paramatma. Even to be situated in self-realization is not complete. Alright, I'm asking, I'm a spirit soul, but what, so what? What do I do as spirit soul? Madhpaktim labhate param. The graduate stage of self-realization is to engage in the devotional service of Krishna. Then he's fully satisfied. Elsewhere, praharshi yashyami sanatati. He becomes fully joyful because he's engaged in the service of Krishna. Okay, we have a few minutes more. Maybe we'll see if there's some questions.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit novice question, but I think...
That's all right.
What you said is, let's say, for me, for example, I like rasagula, sweet.
You like rasagula?
Sweet. Mm. Okay.
You're not alone.
So that is outside. That's outside sweetness, mm. Right? Like, now, if I want to be self-reliant person, right, I have to enjoy that excess sweetness without eating rasagula, but within mm. myself.
You have to enjoy now the sweetness of rasagula without eating it.
Yes, so you are saying basically like living with or expecting that same amount of flavor, taste, and you know, that thing that my mouth feels, I should be able to get it from within my soul's.
There's a...
How do you...
How does this work? Do we now... We're going to give up these rasgulas.
There's a wonderful chant in English. Desire, my great enemy, with the soldier surrounding me, is giving me lots of trouble, oh my Lord. That enemy I will deceive, remaining in the castle. The only way you can overcome desire is being anchored in peace, that when things confront you, you're not preoccupied. It's your indiscriminate contact with matter that catches you. But if you meditate every day, stay anchored in peace, you're not affected by that. You may look at that rascal or that chocolate and other people are going for it. It doesn't, it's like goes over your head. It doesn't bother you.
But he had a more technical question. He had a more technical question, I think.
Well, if you're anchored in peace, you're going to find those things don't trouble you.
Well, but he had a more specific question, I think. That, all right, if I'm in peace, then those desires for rasgula won't trouble me. But he has a specific question. That now I'm tasting rasgula. I desire rasgula. I go to K.C. Das in Calcutta, the best rasgula maker in the world, and I get myself a rasgula, and I pop it in my mouth, and then all the juice comes onto my taste buds.
Let me explain my question.
Okay, you're the best person to explain.
Little better, I think. You know, like you said, I 100% agree. You know, like the real rasgula feeling is good. You know, that sure. feeling is the real thing. You know, that something that
if it came from K.C. Das, it's the real
permanently that feeling. You know, that's so rasgulla I can eat today or tomorrow, but then you know I get sugar compliant and then I can't eat anymore. Right? practically I can't keep eating. Ten times I eat, ten doesn't call for, I won't like it.
Mm.
But the feeling of desire to have that thing is still there, you know. Mm. So if I leave like for next 1 month, then I feel like, feel that, enjoy that again.
Mm.
But like you explained, you know, that physical thing doesn't give a permanent pleasure of rasgala. Mm. So you don't say that rasgala pleasure is bad. It is good, I mean, but you have to find a way of enjoying a source that gives you a permanent level of that and satisfies you. You know, basically, that's what I understand as.
Yeah, in one sense, answering your own question, the, you know, how do I enjoy? Really, I thought I was going to enjoy rasgulla, but now, first of all, when I think about it, I realize maybe I can enjoy one or two or three, but 10 or 15 or 25 rasgullas is beyond my scope, and I'm going to think, oh, another rasgulla, it's going to be horrible.
See, there's a distinction here. Beyond the scope of my tongue, mouth, and digestive system. But my mind likes more. I mean, like, it's
that's also there, all right?
Whatever desire for.
Even though I had 10 and 11, the 11th one was, still, I'll be thinking, how soon can I go back and have some more rasgullas?
Exactly. The mind has a permanent desire. Well, the senses can't support that permanent desire.
So the mind has a permanent desire. I would like to eat rasgullas happily ever after. So what do we do? What does the mind get? Do I imagine within myself the pleasure of eating rasgullas without having to eat them? Do I give up all thought of rasgullas? What sort of thing has to happen? That's the question. Because the desire, the rasgullas are real, the desire is tangible, it's real. Does the desire go away? Maybe that desire might go away, but then there's so many others, that's just one in the big catalog of desires. I gave up my desire for rasgullas and got a desire for chum chums. It's another similar scene. So what happens there? Then we can say, well, when the heart is peaceful, then the rasgulla doesn't matter anymore. But then the question is, how does the heart become peaceful? Especially when I haven't had a rasgulla in 2 months, and I'm thinking about them. How does the heart become peaceful? Or even if I give up thinking about rasgullas. Or let's say I try to give up thinking about all my desires. I have so many desires, they're complicating my life. It would be so much better if I weren't harassed by all these desires. Let me give up desires so that I can be peaceful. Now this desire, then this desire, and that desire, so many desires. It would be so much better if I didn't have to have all these desires, especially since the desires, not only just having them is trouble, but going after them is troublesome. So chasing whatever it is. And someone says, well, give up all desires. And Krishna here says, when one is freed from all desires, how is that possible? That's what we're going to talk about after lunch.
Keep it suspense.
And we're at 101. Do we stop at 101? Yes? Okay, we stop and have lunch and then come back. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. But when the spiritual activity is resumed, that's bhakti. That's devotional service to Krishna. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashotrati Nakankshati Samasarveshu Hiteshu Vat Bhaktim Labhate Pranam. So Sukadeva Goswami attained that stage. The Kumaras also, they were situated in the same impersonal understanding. They also became attracted to the personal feature of the Absolute Truth, to the personality of God. Why? Because his transcendental qualities are so attractive that even the self-realized impersonalist will become drawn to them. That means that the pleasure of engagement in the devotional service of Krishna excels even the transcendental pleasure of impersonal realization. Karanalana. In the Vedic literature, it's said that the pleasure of realization of Krishna, of the personal absolute, is so great that it makes, that in comparison, the impersonal happiness of impersonal realization seems small. For the person who's attained that impersonal realization, material pleasure seems insignificant. The material pleasures are paltry. 5 minutes pleasure, 2 minutes pleasure, and that also by mental concoction. The small thing. The self-realized souls feel compassion for people who are addicted to these material pleasures, so-called pleasures. They feel sorry for those who are, and just as we feel sorry for a drug addict, or we feel sorry for a guy who can't stop playing the slot machines. Feel sorry for a guy who can't stop eating. You feel sorry for people who can't get over their obsessive attempts to enjoy something. Of the self-realized souls, those who've attained this impersonal realization, have realized a happiness so great that they feel compassion for those who are addicted to material, the pursuit of material enjoyment. But the happiness realized from service to the personality of Godhead is so great that the devotees of the Lord feel sorry for the impersonalist. Because the happiness enjoyed in devotional service is so great that it's like an ocean, in comparison to which the happiness of the impersonalist seems like the water in the hoofprint of a calf. The example is more vivid in India. Here we don't see many calves or their footprints, but in the farms you'll see little calves leave their little footprints. When it rains, the footprint fills up with a little inch of water. And what is that compared to the ocean? I guess you could say the water in a tire tread. That we see. That little bit of water is nothing compared to the ocean. So that happiness is enjoyed. Not a false happiness, but the real happiness of serving Krishna. Actually, the devotee is not trying to get happiness. He's trying to give happiness to Krishna. But by giving happiness to Krishna, he automatically enjoys. Just like the hand. It's not trying to keep the food in the palm, it's trying to give it to the stomach. When the stomach gets the food, the hand also gets nourishment. This is the devotional approach, or the path of bhakti yoga, to be so full of desire to serve Krishna that the desire, that all other desires become insignificant. That's the process. Other methods won't work. They'll be very difficult, very difficult, very difficult. Even if one somehow attains perfection, still he's not, he's in a sort of artificial perfection. He's not in his constitutional position. So this bhakti yoga is the goal, and it's the means also. In, say, the yoga system, sitting postures and breathing exercises, first you do that discipline, you follow that discipline, and then you reach the highest stage, samadhi, or the mind, absorption of the mind in Krishna. But the bhakti process is simply to absorb the mind in Krishna. So it's both the goal and the means to the goal as well. The devotee, from the very beginning, chants Hare Krishna. Chanting Hare Krishna means the mind is absorbed in Krishna. And what is his goal? To absorb the mind in Krishna. So the means and the process are the same. He doesn't have to do some other thing. From the very beginning, therefore, he gets that taste. And the more he chants, the more that taste increases. Therefore, it's called Anandam Vibhagam, the ocean of spiritual happiness that increases. Anandam Vibhagam Pratipadam Purnamrita Ashadam. So, alright, maybe I'll stop talking here and see what kind of questions.
Maharaj, you said that in order to manage our desires, we should stop our material desires by desiring for Krishna's service. Mm. But the question is how to get the desire to serve Krishna so that...
By association with those who have that desire. It's highly infectious. The desire to serve Krishna is highly infectious. And therefore we're advised to associate with those who have such desires. Even material desires are highly infectious. We associate with those who are, what, woman hunters or gamblers or so on. Then, you know, pretty soon we'll be hunting for women or gambling. The desires rub off. Some gods, some diet, they come. So, that, and those are just material desires. The spiritual desire is much stronger. And when we associate with those who have it, then we develop that desire. So we're urged, associate with devotees. Associate. Associate with those who have a taste for serving Krishna, and you'll pick up that taste. If we associate with materialists, we'll become materialistic. If we associate with those who are serving Krishna, we'll develop the taste to serve Krishna. Some other question?
You were describing that the emotional service to Krishna is so attractive. Mm-hmm. And they consider impersonal oneness. Satisfaction from the personal oneness is less, and material desires so less. Mm-hmm. They are not so much. They become indifferent. Mm-hmm. To that degree they have that attractiveness for emotional service. You asked the copying reason, you said the association. But still, I feel that the quality of association is also very important.
Very important.
So how?
We're advised. Yes, yeti Krishna. What is that? Kiritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chait. What is that? Praniti peace. Then shushushaya vajanavigyam ananyamanya vindari shunya vidamiksita sangabhatya. Srila Rupa Goswami advises that we should serve. Of course, he says we should honor anyone who's chanting the holy name of Krishna. Krishneti yasya giritam manasadhyayita. And those who've formally taken up the discipline of bhakti yoga, who've been initiated, dikshasti chet panitipis padbhajantamitam, those who've taken up the devotional service of the Lord, we should associate with. And shushushaya bhajanavigyam, and when there's a person who's very advanced in Krishna consciousness, then we should serve him. Shushushaya bhajanavigyam, who's very expert, and ananyamanya, who has no other business than Krishna consciousness, and nindadi shunya hridam ipsitam, and whose heart is pure, free from all contamination. Nindadi shunya. Nindadi, beginning with the tendency to criticize others. Material life means we all want to criticize everyone else, because if they're down, that means I'm up. If you're lower, then I must be higher. So my business is to point out how you're lower, how others are lower. Ninda. So nindadi shunya pridam. If when we meet a person whose heart is so pure, he has no material desires. His only desire is to serve Krishna. Then we should, that association is very much to be sought. We should go after that association.
By one moment of association of that sort, one can attain all perfection.
Everybody's sitting a little bit. You want to take a break for 2 minutes? Or? Yeah, because we started at 2 and at 3.
Started at 2.
Okay, everybody gets a...
5 minutes.
Yes, now say 3:30, we'll start again.
Okay.
Is that all right? Thereabouts? Okay.
Thank you, Madam.
Okay. I wonder what other questions you might have.
Madam, when you were talking about that, we have Krishna, our relationship is like one less thing different. It's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, the Siddhanta philosophy, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we would like to hear about that.
Well, that's a big topic, if you want me to talk. We talked about that, practically. Just didn't give it the name. Chincha. Who can understand these things simply by logic? Achincha. How we can be one with Krishna and at the same time be different from Krishna. Some examples have been given. But to understand fully is beyond power of the material mind. It's called a chinti. Conceivable. Chinti Shambhava.
So during, in our relationship, we have to feel that both ways with you.
Everything will come by serving Krishna. We don't have to feel this way or feel that way. That's all right. We have to serve Krishna. The natural feeling is love for Krishna. When there's love for Krishna, then we'll feel oneness with Krishna. And we'll also feel that Krishna is one person, I'm another person. In your family, when there's love, then you feel that there's oneness in the family. But at the same time, you feel that you're an individual person. The same thing in relation to Krishna. Something else?
Mm-hmm. You answered this one, maybe I didn't get it clearly, but I'm asking one more time. We are parts and parcels of Krishna, that is what we said, and we are one and the same in quality, but not in the quantity. But having get that quality inside us, we still, why do we feel this kind of binded to the material and desires and all of that? Why don't we have the same quality, like
we have the quality. Krishna has desire and we have desire.
And,
but the desire is turned away from Krishna.
Yeah, like where did that come from? Like, you know, why did we get that kind of
Krishna has independence.
We don't
have abhigya swaraj. Krishna has one quality of Krishna is that he has absolute independence. Otherwise he can't be supreme. Yeah, that's too much of this. Krishna has absolute independence. Nobody can dictate, you have to do this, you have to do that. That's the position of the Supreme. Supreme means nobody can dictate. So, and we're part of Krishna, so we also have some independence. The drop of water has the qualities of the ocean of water. The drop is wet, the ocean is wet, the drop is wet. Krishna has independence, we have independence. Our independence is very small. Krishna can do whatever he likes without consequence, unlimitedly. We have independence, but it's tiny. And when we misuse it, we get present trouble.
For a person who is not in Krishna consciousness yet, for a person who is newly introduced to the Krishna consciousness, how does he know or how can he convince his soul that he is in the right path?
For a person who is new to Krishna consciousness, how does he convince his soul that he's on the right path? He doesn't have to artificially do it. If he hears the message of Krishna, according to Ayurveda, the natural Krishna consciousness will awaken. Then he'll feel, just like a person who's eaten. He doesn't have to go someplace looking for a certificate to ascertain that he's full. He'll feel, yes, now I'm full, I don't need to take any more. But Krishna says, prachakshadgalam dhranyam. By practical experience, one will see, yes. If one wants to be convinced by logic, then there's so much logic in the Vedic literature. So much philosophy, and one can, if one's looking to be convinced that way, all right, read Vedic literature and things will become clear. And by practical experience also. The chanting gives direct experience. Service to Krishna gives direct experience. Therefore, Shraddhavatir Bhaktirana Krimishati, Srimad Bhagavatam says, that when we hear the message of Krishna in the association of devotees of Krishna, then the transcendental potency of that message is realized. Kind of like a scientific experiment. When you do it in the right circumstances, you know, you've got the right instruments and the right proportions of chemicals and it's in the right, done the right way, then you get the result. You do it some other way, you don't get the result. So if we hear about Krishna in the association of Krishna's devotees, then the potency of Krishna's message is realized.
Can that be in one lifetime?
Absolutely, one lifetime.
one moment. Kadvanga Maharaj, in one moment he became Krishna conscious. You know the story of Kadvanga Maharaj? He was a king and he fought some serious battles on behalf of the demigods. The demigods were pleased. They said, all right, now you can retire from fighting and you can ask from us any benediction you'd like. He said, I'd like to know when I'm going to die. They said, within a few moments. So he had one standard to Krishna. Made his life successful. So the Bhagavatam says, better one moment like that of self-realization than living thousands of years like a tree. So in one lifetime. Prabhupada used to say we should finish up our business in this lifetime and wait for the next. You understand? By hearing about Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna, by reading the books, associating with devotees, rendering service, by all these means, you'll become convinced.
Maharaj, back to my first question.
Back to your first question.
You said by associating with devotees, you will get the desire of serving Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So Maharaj, my question is, we all are householders here, and we spend like 8 to 10 hours, maybe more than that, with, you know, at work or other places with the materialistic people.
But and don't associate with them.
That is my question. If even we don't want to hear them, but sometimes situations are like that.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains what it means to associate with materialistic people. Because practically everyone's a materialistic person. You get on the bus and the bus driver's not a pure devotee. You go to buy fruit, the fruit seller is not a transcendentalist. So that means you can't get on the bus, you can't buy fruit. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that we shouldn't associate means associate intimately. Srila Prabhupada gives an example by citing a story from Hitopadesha. Hitopadesha's instructive stories. There was a monkey who was traveling and he wanted to cross the river. So in the river there was an alligator, and the alligator volunteered that you want to cross the river, no problem, you can just jump on my back and I'll carry you across. And he said okay, jumped on the back of the alligator. Alligator began swimming across the river. When he got to the middle, he started submerging and he said that now I've got you and I'm going to kill you, and along with my family, we're going to eat your heart. Monkey said, you should have told me. If only you told me. If you told me, because you didn't tell me, I left my heart at home. But it's not too late. You can take me back to the shore, and I'll go get my heart, and then you can have your feast. The alligator thought, well, that makes sense. He brought the monkey back to the shore, and the monkey jumped off. See you later. So Srila Prabhupada gave the moral. When you go out with the alligators, leave your heart at home.
How do we know whether, you know, that person is alligator or not an alligator.
You can see. What is his interest in life? Is his interest to satisfy his senses, to enjoy? Or his interest is to serve God? His interest is to enjoy? Sir, I'm sorry, but you're an alligator. Something else?
What exactly is spirituality?
Well, there's two things. There's spirit and there's matter. For those who are dedicated to matter and relationships with matter, enjoyment of matter, who identify with matter, they're materialists. They think, I'm this body, this is my country, this is my home, this is my family, this is my money, this is my that. And I'll enjoy all of these things, they're material. And the person who knows, I'm spirit, and my relationship ultimately is with Krishna, he's a transcendentalist. He may use matter. He may act in relationship with matter, but he uses that matter in the service, engages that matter in the service of Krishna. Just like this microphone, probably that was Prabhupada's favorite example. The microphone is matter, but we can use it to talk about Krishna, and then the microphone becomes spiritual. We can engage our money in the service of Krishna, we can engage our family life in the service of Krishna. Then everything becomes spiritual. Regains its spiritual quality. Yes?
I'm thinking to expand a little more and thought on the idea, I guess, Krishna conscious individual, and you spoke of materialistic thinking. Would you say that one of Krishna consciousness would not enjoy like cinemas or going shopping or
unless there's a relationship with Krishna, he doesn't find any enjoyment there. The materialists are going to the cinema and they're enjoying something temporary. And they're forgetting about Krishna. So the Krishna conscious person isn't interested in forgetting about Krishna or getting some enjoyment by this or that. He goes to the cinema if there's some Krishna purpose. Maybe he'll distribute some books at the cinema, or if there's something instructive for Krishna, if there's a Krishna conscious.
But what if you see Krishna in every image?
He will, but it's not. These are not the images that he goes after. If he happens to land in the cinema, then he'll see Krishna. He'll see Krishna's energy at work. He'll see that all this energy, which is Krishna's energy, has been spent on this film, and all these people are sitting, watching. They're also Krishna's energy. They're captivated by Krishna's energy. He'll see Krishna everywhere. But he'll see, this is Krishna's external energy. This is Krishna's maya. And he's not particularly interested in seeing that show. When there's spiritual cinema, just as we have our, as there's material cinema, material films, there can be spiritual films. And then we may go. The simple thing, will it help me remember Krishna, or is it going to pull me toward forgetting Krishna? If it will remind me of Krishna, I'll go. If it's going to pull me the other way, I'm not interested in going there. Okay? the basic ideas, whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, let me do that. Whatever is unfavorable, let me ditch that. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya. Anything else? Yes?
From my understanding, I wanted to have one question. When we were talking about the Klesha, Klesha Adhikatara, Echam, that class of the Jesus. Before that verse, Krishna said, who are focusing their mind on the argument is for they finally they come to me. But later he says that because it is very hard for the embodied.
Yeah, after he says he's, it's very difficult, but gradually. They're trying something very difficult, but gradually, they may also come to the point. Bahunam janmanamante genavan manprapatyute. They're seeking knowledge by this way, that way. Gradually, they're making little progress. And when they finally come to the conclusion of knowledge, they think, well, Krishna is everything. Let me surrender. That's the slow way. Fast way is to say, well, Krishna is everything. Let me surrender right now. Not go through all this roundabout, speculative investigation. Is that okay?
Yeah. For bhaktas, it's not a whole problem to understand Krishna's words, Krishna's direction. Easily we can understand. Krishna said, surrender to me right now, I'm everything, and you can do it. But why I ask Krishna, because some people ask me that way, although it is, when the time, it's not bad at all.
Well, you can, just like somebody wants to touch their nose, you can touch it this way very easily. If you want, you can go around the back of your head and try and touch your nose. But why make life difficult for yourself? Your goal is to touch your nose. Why do you want to go around the back of your head? There's some story in Mark Twain, the Huckleberry Finn, I think it was, about he wanted to, there was a slave, and Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer wanted to free the slave. So I guess it was Huckleberry Finn said, you know, well, you can just, you know, cut through the lock and let him out. So Tom Sawyer said, no, that would be too easy. So he developed a very roundabout, you know, it became a whole adventure. So for spiritual realization, no need to make it a whole complicated process. Better to take the straightforward means. Well, yes. What is the
Raja Yoga meditation?
Raja Vidyam, Raja Guryam. Krishna says this is the king of all yoga, bhakti. Yoginam api sarvesham madgitena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomadana. Krishna says of all the different yogis, hatha yogis, raja yogis, this yogi, that yogi, jnana yogi, yoginam api sarvesham, out of all of them, madgitena antaratmana, the one who's always making me the goal of life, thinking of me, shraddhavan, with great faith, bhajate yoma, engaging in devotional service to me, same yuktatamamata, he's the best yogi. Well, this is the king of yoga, bhakti yoga. Others, someone may be teaching silent meditation, or this, that, with some impersonal goal. But that's not the king of meditation, king of yoga. This is the king. All right. It is now 5 minutes of, and it's always good to end early. You didn't pay anything for this seminar, so I'm not cheating you. You're not losing anything. Thank you all very much. All glories to you.